Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 3, The Marriage of Sukanya and Chaivana Muni. Text 17 is on the board, is that right? There's no purport, so I'll just keep on reading. The Ashwini Kumaras were very pleased to see Sukanya's chastity and faithfulness. Thus they showed her Chaivana Muni, her husband, and after taking permission from him, they returned to the heavenly planets in their plane. Thereafter, King Shariati, desiring to perform a sacrifice, went to the residence of Chaivana Muni. There he saw, by the side of his daughter, a very beautiful young man, as bright as the sun. After receiving obeisances from his daughter, the king, instead of offering blessings to her, appeared very displeased and spoke as follows. Chikirshitam te kim idam patistvaya. Pralambito loka namaskrito muni. Yatvam jara grastam asat dasammatam. Vihaya jaram bhajasemum agavam. Chikirshitam, which you desire to do, te of you, kimidam, what is this, pati, your husband, twaya, by you, pralambita, has been cheated, loka namaskrita, who is honored by all people. Muni, a great sage. Yet, because. Tvam, you. Jaragrastam, very old and invalid. Asati, O unchaste daughter. Asamatam, not very attractive. Vihaya, giving up. Jaram, paramour. Bhajase, you have accepted. Amum, this man. Advagam, compared to a street beggar. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Oh, and chaste girl. What is this that you have desired to do? You have cheated the most respectable husband who is honored by everyone. For I see that because he was old, diseased, and therefore unattractive, you have left his company to accept as your husband this young man who appears to be a beggar from the street. Purport. This shows the value of Vedic culture. According to circumstances, Sukanya had been given a husband who was too old to be compatible with her. Because Chaivana Muni was diseased and very old, he was certainly unfit for the beautiful daughter of King Shariati. Nonetheless, her father expected her to be faithful to her husband. When he suddenly saw that his daughter had accepted someone else, even though the man was young and handsome, he immediately chastised her as a sati, unchaste, because he assumed that she had accepted another man in the presence of her husband. According to Veda culture, even if a young woman is given an old husband, she must respectfully serve him. This is chastity. It is not that because she dislikes her husband, she may give him up and accept another. This is against Veda culture. According to Veda culture, a woman must accept a husband given to her by her parents and remain chaste and faithful to him. Therefore, King Shariati was surprised to see a young man by the side of Shakunya. Shakunya. I'll read the next verse too, because it's similar. All my daughter, who were born in a respectable family, here you have degraded your consciousness in this way. How is it that you are shamelessly maintaining a paramour? You will thus degrade the dynasties of both your father and your husband to hellish life. Purport is quite clear that according to Vedic culture, a woman who accepts a paramour or a second husband in the presence of the husband she has married is certainly responsible for the degradation of her father's family and the family of her husband. The rules of Vedic culture in this regard are strictly observed in the respectable families of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas even today. Only the Shudras are degraded in this matter. For a woman of the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya class to accept another husband in the presence of the husband she has married, or to file for divorce, or accept her boyfriend or paramour, is unacceptable in the Veda culture. Therefore, King Shariati, who did not know the real facts of Chaivana Muni's transformation, was surprised to see the behavior of his daughter. As I mentioned before, when Gandhi went to England and he was asked while he was there, what do you think of British culture? And his reply was, I think he thought it would be a good idea. So we're living in what we think is culture, although it's quickly being revealed is not really culture. In other words, the closer it gets to animal life, the more it's evident that it's not human culture, at least. I guess the ants and the bees and the dogs, they have their way of dealing with things, of doing things, but it's not culture. So where does culture begin? According to Bhagavad Gita, it begins with controlling the mind and the senses. So what does it mean to controlling the mind and the senses? Aren't there yogis who put up their arms like this for for 20 years? It withers away. Aren't they controlling their senses? There are different ways of understanding control of the senses. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one who restrains his senses and organs of action, but his mind dwells on sense objects, he certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Karmendriyani samyamya yaste manasasmaran indriyartam vimudatma mityatras uchite. Karmendriya samyamya, is that right? Samyamya. That controlling the indriyas, the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses, our eyes, our ears, our tongue, and the arms, the legs, the belly, the genitals, the anus. Well, one who controls them, but at the same time is thinking about sense gratification, he certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. So that ultimately, all this sense control means control the mind. And what does it mean to control the mind? It appears that my mind is uncontrolled. How can I control it? I try to control it, Arjuna said, and it's more difficult than trying to control the wind. Chanchalam himana krishna pramati balavadridam tasyaham nigraham manye vayor eva sadhuskriram. For the mind is restless, turbulent, and very strong, O Krishna, and to subdue it seems to be more difficult than controlling the wind. So many times, even the devotees, they think, well, okay, it's so strong, turbulent, even for Arjuna, what to speak of my poor self? I might as well just give up. Wherever the mind goes, oh, there I go. Hey. Oh, there's going there, that way. I have no control. I'm just a soul. I'm a victim. My mind tells me to do this. I have no other choice. We do have a choice. In other words, we can think. Choice begins with thinking, what are my choices? Inquisitiveness. Consciousness, awareness. What am I thinking about? Now, if one actually hears from Bhagavad Gita, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, then one may have some information what one is thinking about. Just like there are so many movies that people watch. And even the devotees, as I said before, everyone went to see the Avatar movie. Not everyone, but devotees even went to see it because it was about the Avatar. So it must be spiritual. It's just some spiritual connection. Someone goes to see that movie, then one will think about the movie. Because these movies are made in such a way is that they become very vivid in one's memory. Now, no one paid the devotee usually to go and see the movie. If one didn't go and see the movie, it was not possible to think about the movie. But once one went to see the movie, then immediately there are so many thoughts. Now when the thoughts go by, unless we see it, hopefully after the movie we went to the Bhagavatam class, and then we can see the movie in relationship to the Bhagavatam. And when we see the, I think it was color, what was his color in the movie? Blue or something? Was it blue? It was blue. So we think, oh, this is the perverted reflection of Krishna, of one of Krishna's avatars. They got it from Krishna. The plants were illuminated, so this is the perverted, they must have read the Bhagavatam. So then one tries to see it in relation to Krishna. So then one doesn't get carried away. Oh, what a wonderful movie. They're flying in the sky. I wish I was there. Matter of fact, a lot of people I heard, they were lamenting the fact that they weren't there. They couldn't go there. They thought, oh, it's only in the movie. I wish I could go to a place where I could get on a bird and fly around on it. Where the plants are illuminated. The people are avatars. I wish I could go there. Because actually, that's where they want to go, is the spiritual world. So if one sees like that, then the control of the mind, material mind, lessens. Because one sees things in relation to Krishna. So that's our choice. If we hear from Krishna and from Krishna's representatives, then when we stop and think, what am I thinking about? When we try to analyze it, if we see it's in relation to Krishna, then we accept it. And if we see it's in relation to something else, then we put our minds on Krishna. That's all. And how do we do it? How is it all going on? What is our control? Does anyone know? How are we responsible? Did I put that thought in my mind? I'm a victim. It just came in. I didn't invite you. Didn't even knock on my door. Just came in. I'm a victim. But it's a really nice thought. I might as well enjoy being a victim for a while. But what is our control? How do we control things? What is our... Does anyone know? Adi Purusha.
Our desires?
Yeah, how does our desire manifest in controlling? How is it that our desire control... What is our desire control? Do you ever feel like you're controlling things with your desire? Okay, we'll try Akshaya.
Like to say no.
Say no. We say no all the time.
And then we do no.
We do know. You do know. Well, that's not very good. You say no, but you do know. Yes.
We can respond.
How do we respond?
Happens, we can have a reaction to what is going on.
I'm sure we will have a reaction to what's going on.
That's our power, to choose how we react.
Yeah, to choose how we react. In other words, if we have some thought, then we have to analyze it and either accept it or reject it. As a matter of fact, a lot of people do that. All day long, thoughts come in their mind. I want to kill that person. And then we say, well, it may not be a good idea right now. No, no. Wait, just be patient. So we reject the idea. A lot of people reject it. Imagine if people didn't reject their ideas that come through their mind. It'd be a pretty messy thing to go downtown to see what was actually on people's minds. On the other hand, we can keep on rejecting. So eventually we have to accept something. So if we're not accepting Krishna consciousness, then we have to accept something material. And generally our choices are not really between the mode of goodness and the mode of passion, or even the mode of ignorance. It's either ignorance or the deeper ignorance. In other words, there are varieties of the modes of nature also. And either we accept the, you know, in the material world, for instance, here, we have the king, Shariati. He was expecting his daughter to accept something higher than the lower. There's no mention here of Krishna. You know, what, you weren't thinking about Krishna, and that's why you got involved with this paramour. There's no mention of Krishna. There's just something about goodness, culture. Passion is not culture. Ignorance is not culture. Goodness is culture. When one is actually hearing from the Vedas and following their instructions, that's the beginning of human life. And one of the most principal things is that one should understand that as soon as one becomes interested in unrestricted sex life, in sense gratification, without any purpose, higher purpose, then one becomes degraded to the level of an uncultured person. Although in modern society it's deemed very romantic, and actually that's actually the goal of people's lives. Being in romance and something. And if you can't do that, you take intoxication so you can dream of romance. But that's the whole thing. That's the whole point of modern civilization, is giving people an opportunity to live a life of illusion. And when one hears about culture, immediately it's rejected. Culture meaning that you're supposed to restrain your senses. Now, one who's never heard about Krishna, and one only hears about the external acting in the mode of goodness, it makes no sense to people because they have no brains. They've already lost their brains. So how can restraining their senses make any sense to them? Because they don't know why they're doing it, why they should do it. As far as they're concerned, they're only going to live for a few years more, and after that they disappear. So why bother, you know, restraining the senses? What do you get out of it? At the end, everyone winds up in the same place. We all go to the same place, Nothingville, where there's nothing going on because there's nothing there. And therefore, if you explain to people this story, people will think, oh, Sukanya, she got it right. This old man, her father, just out of touch with reality. But that's why as Krishna says, Shayam Swadamo Viguna Para Dharma Tsunisitat, Shay Dharmeni Dinam Shayak Para Dharma Bayavaha. That it's better to perform one's own prescribed duty, even imperfectly, than perform someone else's duty. Failure in I don't think the word is failure. Shreya dvasvadamo viguna para dharma sunusita. Shrey dharame nidanam shreyak. One's not performing one's prescribed duty perfectly is better because to follow someone else's duty is dangerous. In other words, it's understandable in modern society where people believe that their body and that this is all in all, there's nothing beyond this body, that they're just going to act like an animal because that's what an animal believes. An animal never studies the Bhagavatam, or very rarely, or the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, the only thing it knows is I'm this body and I have to serve my senses. But human form of life is meant to understand that we're actually the soul, and this body is only one body in many, in a future of perhaps more bodies. But in any case, ourselves as a soul, the real purpose of life is to get out of the bodily concept of life, not to absorb oneself more and more into it. Now, material life always promises some kind of happiness, and indeed, unless there was some kind of happiness in material life, then people would probably become more serious about Krishna consciousness. As soon as there's less happiness in material life or more suffering, then people start questioning. Every time I met someone at the airport who was coming from a funeral, they usually took a book. Because they even thought for a few minutes, or maybe even a day or longer, that they might die. Although they didn't really believe it, but they saw there was a possibility. And therefore they were curious. Some curiosity, inquisitiveness, awakened within them. So that inquisitiveness is there and inherent in the material nature. In other words, the more one acts like an animal in the human form of life, then the more one suffers. Although it's simultaneously one's intelligence is being taken away through sense gratification, still, eventually one may be beaten down by the material nature and inquire, why am I suffering? They're advertising, if I did this and I do that, then I should be happy. And the only happy people I see are on the billboards advertising that I should do this and that. But everyone I know is always complaining about how how many problems they have. But the advertisement is so good, the movies are so good, there's some faith. Maybe I'm the only one who's wrong. Everyone in the movie seems happy. Why don't I follow the movie? That's why the actresses and the actors, they're given some special position in society. Because they're the only ones who know how to pretend. They're the ones who know how to pretend the best that they're happy. Everyone else is trying to pretend they're happy, although when you get to know them, you find out how miserable they are. On the other hand, when there is culture and people are actually living according to duty, and the duty is basically to get free from lust, anger, and greed. In other words, whatever situation the material nature puts us into, from the external point of view, it may be very desirable or maybe very undesirable. But they're both equal in the sense that it doesn't really matter whether we're in a very desirable position or undesirable. What matters is where our consciousness is. Where our consciousness is, that will determine how we actually feel, how we see things, how we feel, what our approximate destination is going to be. Even in the best situation, if our consciousness is in the wrong place, like Nala Kuvara, Mani Griva, they were in the heavenly planets. They were in the Ganges. And this was a very nice Ganges. There was no garbage thrown in it. It was completely pure. It's like the original Ganges. In the heavenly planets with the apsaras. You know, beautiful ladies. They were intoxicated with the first class intoxication. I mean, it was probably organic. And they were in love. And they were just, you know, helping out the young girls there. But their consciousness was in the wrong place. And therefore they wound up as trees for a while by the blessings of Narada Muni. Best place, best situation, but wrong consciousness. On the other hand, Prahlad Maharaj was in a horrible position. How would you like demons being sticking tridents into your body all the time? Put it over there. I'm a little itching over there. Just why? Well, you put it in the wrong place. That hurts. Being thrown over a cliff. If someone picked you up, picked any of us up, and took us to a cliff over here in Slovenia, and said, "I'm sorry, you know, what do you think of Hrani Kashipu? Boo, swaha." Not very pleasant. And yet, Prahlad Maharaj's consciousness was in the best place. And therefore his life was successful. So it doesn't really matter what our situation is. The problem is when we want to change it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he quoted from Lord Brahma, Stane sita shudikatam tonu vangmano bira. After hearing from the sage, after Gyane Priyasam Upasta Manteva, after putting aside all the nonsense speculation we've heard, and becoming a little submissive to something else. Not that I know everything. I went to the best schools. I got the best marks. I'm so many people's hero. Therefore I know everything. No, to become a little submissive to the great sages. Repeating actually and realize the Bhagavatam. And what's the first thing Brahma says? Stane sita. Remain in your own position. Don't worry that you got the body of a man or body of a woman. You were born in Slovenia. You could have, but you can still get a green card and go to America or something. The land of the free and the brave. Don't worry about where you are. Don't worry about what body you have. Worry about where your consciousness is. Because if you put your consciousness into Krishna consciousness, then your life will be successful. And if you put it anywhere else, then you're going to be a failure. You'll be wasting your time. So all these rules and regulations, women should stick with their husband, is not meant to torture the poor lady. It's meant so that they don't think, oh, if I had a better situation, everything would be better. Or if the man has a woman, a wife, just like Prabhupada's, he got married. No, his wife, Radharani Devi Dasi, was a chaste lady. Part of the Brahminical, part of, you know, more or less cultural lady, although she drank tea. But nowadays, if you said, you know, even in our movement, well, I was married to this lady. We had 4 or 5 children, but I decided to leave her because she drank tea. You say, what? I drink tea too. Herbal tea. I don't think she was drinking herbal tea. But that was the, of course she sold his Bhagavatam to get biscuits. That was a little extreme. But generally speaking, pretty harmless compared, but Prabhupada said tea or me. And she decided for the tea, jokingly, but Prabhupada took it seriously. So not an extreme example of incompatibility, but Prabhupada, of course, he was over 50 and he decided to leave at that time, because that's taking vanaprastha, at least, if not eventually sannyas. But that was culture. That was the culture. At least that was Krishna's arrangement for Srila Prabhupada. Now, we ourselves, we don't take anything seriously. But the point is that if there is some understanding that I should tolerate, I should remain in my position, even the situation is very uncomfortable, even disturbing to a certain extent, then the result is that I'll be practiced. So at the time of death, I'll be able to think about Krishna. the fact that your husband or wife is drinking tea, you can't tolerate it. Of course, this probably was a different story. But what's to speak of the time of death? What are you going to be able to tolerate? Prahlad Maharaj was not in an unfortunate situation. He was fully prepared for leaving his body because he was fully in Krishna consciousness. And of course, luckily, we're not put into the test so far where it's intolerable for us. That we can still think about Krishna. But sometimes we don't do it because we're too relaxed. Because we think everything's going all right. And then if something goes wrong, we go, wow, how did this happen? I was chanting my rounds. Well, it was something like my rounds. I thought about Krishna a little bit during the day. How is it possible that I'm placed in this situation? Well, it's an opportunity to think about Krishna again. And then eventually, if we actually start thinking about Krishna, even when we think there's no problem, when we have to think hard and think about what's my problem for today. We think, oh, there's no problem, now I can go to sleep. The days where there's so many problems, we're working real hard to solve the problems. There's no problems. Oh, I can relax. I'm free. No, then the real advancement is that even when we think there's no problems, then we think about Krishna. We even think, what should I do? I'll read the Bhagavatam. Oh, that's so boring, this philosophy. Share my rounds. The 16 is done. I'm finished for the day. I'm liberated. That's the closest I get to liberation. Liberated from chanting more rounds. What should I do? And the mind goes, beep, beep. Why don't you just go to sleep and dream of something nice? Sure, no, why not? My pranayama. No, we have to take the goal of our life to think about Krishna. That's the whole thing of sadhana bhakti, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. That's the idea of whatever we're doing. So we take that seriously, then we can accept all kinds of circumstances. And if we think, well, all right, I'll remember Krishna sometimes when I need him, and when I don't need him, he can go far away. No, we actually accept smartavyaksaratam vishnu vismartak jatuna kinchit sarva vidhi nisedya asyur evaya eva kinkara. That the goal is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. And that's what all the rules and regulations are for. So we're put in a situation, and as invariably happens, that after a while familiarity breeds contempt. In every sphere. You're married for some time, and if the aim was sense gratification in some way, sense gratification doesn't only mean illicit sex life, it also means that this person will love me, they'll appreciate me, there'll be romance for the whole time, there'll always be a spark in our relationship. And then when that chewing gum, just like chewing gum only has a certain amount of sugar in it. And you can chew it and chew it and chew it and the sugar is gone. And then after a while the sugar goes out. You think there's no more sugar, it's useless. Get another piece of gum. So that's inevitable in every relationship. Even you get a spiritual master, initiating guru, and you're, oh, he's as good as God. And he makes a little mistake. Oh, maybe he's not quite as good as God. And then after a while, he's bogus. He's a pretender. I never saw his feet leave the ground even for a second. He doesn't even know how to float. Or as one guru was giving a lecture one time, and some boy walked in and he saw that the guru had glasses on. And he said, look, he has glasses on. They told me he was perfect. And he left. So familiarity is always there, will eventually be there. But one has to tolerate one's mind and then realize that the relationship is to help me think about Krishna. The marriage was meant to help me think about Krishna. And every relationship I have is meant to help me think about Krishna and help others think about Krishna. And if we do that, then we'll get a higher taste. Then we'll understand the real purpose of what our activities are. And if we don't do that, we'll get tired after a while, whatever we're doing. We want to change, do something else. Go to another temple, go to another country, get another job, get another husband, get a couple of husbands, get a couple of wives, get a girlfriend on the side, get a different dog. Hey dog, you're not submit, you know, you don't bow wow as much as you used to do. You're getting old. I don't like old dogs, you know. You see that door? Go out. I'm going to close it. And don't come back. You've used up your usefulness in my life. So that's always there. But one has to understand, sanesita shudigatam tanuvangmanobir. Be satisfied with every situation we're under. Don't think it has to gratify my senses, meet my expectations. Utilize it as an attitude of service. What can I do in this position to serve Guru and Krishna? Then one will think about Krishna, and whatever situation one will be helpful for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Then, then we'll have some attraction to hearing this Vedic literature. Our minds won't be agitated to find something new to do. We'll actually have a peaceful mind. And with a peaceful mind, we can actually read these stories and think, hey, that makes sense. Sukanya was not in such a bad position. Beautiful girl, old diseased man, you know. She should have left a long time ago. This is just ridiculous, you know. Her father, what an old fogey this guy was. Beautiful girl, life ahead of her, had to serve this old decrepit man. What for? No, then one will actually understand and appreciate these stories. Unless one is willing to follow the example in the story of the hero and the heroine, Sukanya, Shariati, the father, Chaivanamuni, unless one takes them as his heroes, this Bhagavatam means nothing. It means no sense. For a person in materialistic life, in this materialistic culture, this Bhagavatam means it's actually the opposite of what they think should be done. They think this is terrible. They should burn this book. It's misleading the youth. It's brainwashing them. Dangerous. Like we were labeled as one of the 10 most dangerous cults in Belgium. In 2000s. And why were we the most dangerous cult? One of the top dangerous, 10 dangerous cults? Because we did two things wrong. What we did wrong, not so bad. We were vegetarian. We were vegetarians. So Belgium, where their major occupation is killing a cow. We're vegetarians. So that was practically unforgivable, but it was also almost forgivable. Maybe we had digestive problems or something. Anyone who joined the movement, so couldn't eat meat, be normal. And the worst thing is that we actually went on the street sometimes, although not that often, and we chanted the names of God. And we brainwashed people. They heard the name of God and became contaminated. Some people even gave up their material life and joined our movement as a result. So this was dangerous. So they even passed a law that we couldn't have temples, a Hare Krishna temple, within something like 300 meters from a school, in case the sound vibration entered the school and destroyed the children's lives. Good way of doing it. They make people miserable and they still want money. They just promise happiness. So, the conclusion is we should go on with whatever situation we're under. Try to improve our consciousness. Try to understand what's going on in the Bhagavatam. Take them as an example. Not our past ghostly haunted, you know, memories from the past. All the great examples we have of our heroes in the movies. And you find out about their lives, you know. Their fifth marriage, going on the sixth. They died of the drug addiction or alcohol, whatever. Most animalistic people are our heroes. They could run faster, kick the ball harder, do everything, but ultimately they were just bigger versions of the most degraded people in the world. And these are our heroes, so of course we take up their traits too, and we can't understand. Remaining in my position, no one wants to remain in the position. It's upward mobility. If you can't go upward, then your life is unsuccessful, and then you have to buy a virtual reality set where you can imagine you're going upward. At the same time, you're going down, down, down to the deepest regions as you're imagining you're going upward. So stay in our position, at the same time, try to actually go upward with our consciousness and Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, dear Maharaj, for this deep class about life situations. I have several questions. Since you mentioned some actors and actresses last, maybe I can ask about some thoughts. I had just recently some very famous actress came to Lviv, Ukraine, and she was filmed chanting Hare Krishna and talking to devotees and taking prasadam. So that looked like some good endorsement or something, some opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness. There are some other actors or actresses who, one of them called her sons Krishna Balaram and something else. In India we have some actresses who, as far as I understand, live very, if I know correctly, religious life, and they engage in some preaching or service to the movement. So how would we speak about them? Because some parts of lives of some of these actors and actresses may not be so religious, and some other seem to be engaged in service.
Yeah. Well, we take the good. We take the good if they're going to, just like we respect within the mind someone who's chanting Hare Krishna, but doesn't follow so carefully. So we can engage in service, like George Harrison wasn't really a very strict sadhanaka for the most of his life, but Prabhupada encouraged him because he was helping to spread Krishna consciousness. We don't endorse their activities outside of Krishna consciousness, but we accept if they appreciate Krishna, then That's the positive thing in their life, and that will help others too.
I have another question. Thank you very much. I have another question. You mentioned being inquisitive, getting some, like, people who are coming from the funerals will have more inquisitiveness, and they will buy books. And mostly those who become devotees, they have some inquisitiveness about the soul and some other things. So my question is, why would we lose this inquisitiveness? It seems that sometimes devotees learn what they think is everything. They seem to satisfy their inquisitiveness, and then they become jaded. After some time, some devotees may drift away. So what is behind this phenomenon? Because it seems that there is infinite world, the spiritual world, to be inquisitive about. But
well, no one loses their inquisitiveness. They just lose what they're inquisitive about. As Shukadeva Goswami said, people are asking hundreds and thousands of questions. But then what are they asking about? What to eat, what to sleep, how to mate, and how to defend. So that's what, we never lose our inquisitiveness. But as we engage in sense gratification, then we lose our spiritual inquisitiveness. And we gain our material inquisitiveness. As we engage our senses, like for instance, if you eat something nice, like there's some festival or something, you get a sundae, it's strawberry, and then you see one which is carob. Then actually, if you like the strawberry one, you think, but what is the carob one like? There's an actual inquisitiveness. Now you may not remember that this sandesh was offered to Krishna, but that doesn't stop your inquisitiveness about the carob one. So we're naturally inquisitive about experience. What would it be like to experience this? What would it be like to experience that? But if we don't get spiritual inquisitiveness, if we don't get a spiritual taste, then we remain inquisitive about the material life. Now, material life promises not only positive happiness through sense gratification, but also some kind of protection from the lack of sense gratification. So sometimes we're put into a position where we feel ourselves, we need defense. Now, materialists, when they feel they need defense, they'll just study and try to figure out all the different ways of defending themselves, getting a bank balance, getting an extra lock on their door, getting whatever. So they're inquisitive how to defend myself. But when they see someone die, for instance, a pious person, they see someone die and they think, well, he had a lot of locks on his door. They remember that. I went to his house, it took him 5 minutes to unlock it. You know, he had so much money in the bank. So many things were going to him, but he still died. So these things don't work. Then he may become a little inquisitive. Maybe, is there anything else? I heard way back when I was 5 years old, there was something called spirit, but I don't know nothing about it. And then if someone offers you a book at that time, you may think, yeah, let me check this out too. Because everything else doesn't work. Maybe this will work. So inquisitiveness is always there. And if you don't get the book, you'll go home and you'll take an extra vitamin pill. Maybe that will work. Go on the internet, find out how to prevent this or prevent that. So when inquisitiveness is always there. Even the animals are inquisitive, but to speak of ourselves. Anything else? Yes.
Is it okay, is it correct, actually, if we understand Sat, Chit, and Ananda as different levels of religions, different religions?
Can you give me an example?
For example, Ananda is Krishna consciousness.
Well, probably because the example, those examples using, not necessarily for specific religions, but for instance, the Jnanis and the Karmis, they're interested in Brahman realization. Because ultimately, the Jnanis and Karmis culminate in the same situation that the four Kumaras are, perfect Brahman. A perfect Brahman means one who's situated in Brahman realization. So Brahman or Sat is the goal of Anashram Dharma system, liberation, Sat. And the yogis are interested in consciousness, in super soul realization, knowledge, because super soul knows everything, he's directing everyone, what they're doing. So to become I'd emerge into the super soul, surrender to the super soul for the yogis. And for the bhaktas, they're interested in love. Love and bliss are the same thing. There can't be any bliss, any pleasure in anything material or spiritual without love. So it's the jnanis, the karmis, jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas. Those are satchitananda. And the materialistic persons, they have no idea usually what sad is, what to speak of real, if only when they come in contact with the Vedic literature or some indirect Vedic literature such as the Bible or people like that, scriptures like that, which contain truth within them, do they have any idea what knowledge is. Yeah, well, Jesus, whoever Jesus was, whatever. But within the Bible, there's pure knowledge coming from devotion. So, but then, of course, due to lack of proper discipline of succession, it's not clear fully what his message was, but definitely you can see that his message was bhakti. Yeah, when they advance enough in Christianity, they come to the Krishna consciousness movement. But that's, if they actually follow Christianity, then they'll appreciate the Krishna consciousness movement. And Prabhupada, one time he had a kirtan with the Trappists, some religious group, Christian religious group, and he introduced the holy name. Hallowed be thy name. And they had this ecstatic kirtan, where they were dancing and chanting for a long time. So, of course, they're more receptive. They believe in God in different ways, and they follow some principles, although not necessarily all of them, and some of them do. So they're much more receptive. Kuala Grantarashimad Bhagavatam Kidai, Srila Prabhupada Kidai, Gaur Pimanande.